this morning in our study in Ecclesiastes, to our study in Ecclesiastes, and we'll have this week and next week to continue on, and then we'll have 2 weeks of a break. Pastor Matt and I will be gone in 2 weeks, and then I'll be gone the following, and then we'll jump back in and should have a pretty consistent schedule after that to be able to plow through the rest of the book. So as you recall back just to 2 weeks ago, we went through the first portion of the first chapter. So we looked through, kind of in the first 2 weeks that we went, we started with an introduction, kind of covering verses 1 through 3, really. Talked through authorship and then Hevel and what that word vanity is. And then we introduced the programmatic question in verse 3 of chapter 1, which is really the question that Qohelet is seeking to answer, is what does man gain or profit, or what advantage does he get by all of his efforts under the sun? And then 2 weeks ago, we looked through verses 4 through 11, which is this introductory poem, the rest of, before Qohelet starts to talk in first person, right, before he actually introduces himself in verse 12, which we'll look at today, he goes through this poem about the cycle, the unbreakable cycle of humanity, right? And so some of the lessons that we learned from that are, one, that life under the sun is temporary, so it's good and healthy for us to embrace our mortality under the sun. Life under the sun it's repetitive. Live, die, be forgotten, repeat from generation to generation. So all of our efforts won't introduce anything new into this cycle. So beware spending your life chasing something revolutionary for humanity. Not in a change the world in a better sense, but as far as breaking the cycle of live, die, forget, repeat. You can't break that. You can't change that. And then life under the sun, I guess I just mentioned it, but life under the sun is forgotten. So we shouldn't live for our legacy. We shouldn't live to be remembered. Meaning isn't grounded in remembrance. We will all be forgotten under the sun. And so that's just the fact of life here in this unbroken cycle, but broken world under the sun. So that was kind of his introductory poem. Now today, I made probably a bit of a mistake as far as how much I wanted to cover in the wrong direction. I broke it up, I think, a little bit too short, so I'm not sure how long we'll go today, because I attempted last night to scramble and say, well, maybe I should add some more onto this and tried to get the next section, but I don't know that I'm quite ready for it. So we're just going to look at verses 12 through 18 today, and the way that it's functioning, if you're kind of looking through here, 12 through 18 is the introduction again to this quest he's about to kind of embark on. So he introduces himself in verse 12. He says, hey, I'm here. I'm the preacher. I'm Qohelet. Nice to meet you. I have authority. I'm the king in Israel. I know what I'm talking about. If there's anybody here that has the authority to do what I'm about to do, it's me. And so here's what I'm going to do. And he ends up introducing essentially his quest in verses 12 through 18. And then he explains it throughout all of chapter 2. And he'll continue doing more, but really 1:12, where we're at today, all the way through the end of chapter 2, is one big section. He introduces his quest, and then he says, I tried this, and all of it was Hevel, all of it was vanity. So you have, likely you may already have kind of headings that section these things out in your Bibles. But the vanity or the Hevel of pleasure would be chapter 2, 1 through 11. And I might be brave enough to start some of that today, but we'll probably look at it next week. And then you have the vanity of, or the Hevel of wisdom in 2:12 through 2:17. And the Hevel of toil or work in 18:12. through the end of through 23. And then one of his first conclusions, his big conclusions, 24 through the end of the chapter. So that's where we'll be going the next couple of weeks. There's a bit of a break before chapter 3. So that's where we're headed. So what I want to do is just take some time to look at this text altogether, 12 through 18, and we'll look at several things. First is the flow of the text. So I want to show you one thing that he's doing here. This will help just with a bit of a big picture of what's going on. So he starts out with this statement, right? Here I am. Hi, I'm Kohelet. I'm the preacher. This is the adventure I'm about to go on. So he explains his process for the adventure of Ecclesiastes, right? So he says, we would label this A. So, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. There's what he's about to do, right? That's his process. And then his conclusion, it's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. And then he has, that would be B, right? So we have A, B, C. C would be a poem to sort of illustrate his point, a brief proverb. What's crooked can't be made straight, and what is lacking can't be counted. Then he goes right back into the same pattern. He says, here's my process again. This is what I did. I said in my heart, I've acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Here's his conclusion. I perceived that this also is but a striving after the wind. Then we have a brief poem. For in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So you kind of see the ABC, ABC that he's doing there in this section. And then we'll go into three different pursuits that he, or roads, I guess, paths that he kind of chases these things down. So what I want to do for a minute is to just take a look at this text. I want to give you maybe just a couple minutes, because we have a few more themes to introduce into the book. I want you to look here in 12 through 18, and just for a few minutes, and see what words you see that are themes, aside from the ones we've already brought out. So we've talked about Hevel, we've talked about striving after the wind, we've talked about under the sun. But what else begins to come out as a theme here in 12 through 18? I'll just give you a minute or two to look through it, and then we'll revisit with some answers. Okay, what are some things that you're seeing as perhaps a theme throughout this short section. Okay, so there's two things that you mentioned there, at least just strictly as far as the words that are being said, regardless of maybe what they're meaning, is you just draw out heart, which is a big one, and then it won't be exactly a theme for today, but what you've noticed is, wow, there's I a lot in here, right? Because this is his experiment. This is him explaining, hey, here's what I did, here's what I did, here's what I did, here's what I found, here's what I was doing, here's what I was discovering, here's what I was searching. So he uses, I mean, in these next, here through two at least, now through the end of chapter two, this whole section is a lot of first person, right? But yeah, let's look at heart. And particularly, yes, he's using it in the possessive, at least here. So he is applying his heart. And we have it later here. He said, in my heart, and my heart has applied great wisdom. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Okay, so we have four times there in these short verses. And essentially what this is doing is, at least there's a theory, I agree with it, that he's kind of introducing his partner in this expedition. He's like, yeah, me and my heart went on this journey. And he uses this constantly throughout, especially this and the next chapter. It's almost like he's saying, you know, this is the part of me that I sent out, that I applied to on this great task. It's like my experiment partner, right? He's commissioning his heart to help him on his journey. And of course, he very quickly gives us conclusions about what he found. But especially right here at the beginning, even, like, he's seeking and searching out all that's done under heaven by wisdom. He's seeking and searching. So he's just saying, guys, this isn't a one-day thing. This isn't a one-week thing. I've been working on this for a long time. I've chased down a lot of different ideas. I've given myself to a whole host of different things to test them and try them and experiment with them to see how they affect man. And it was my heart that went on this journey with me, as it were, right? The center of the human person. This isn't just a mental thing. This isn't just intellectual. This isn't just philosophical. This is involving all of me. And here's what I found. So yeah, the heart is definitely a theme now and continued on throughout. Any other observations or things that you see as themes? Wisdom. So he does all of this by wisdom, and then down here, he's acquired great wisdom. He applied his heart to know wisdom. He has great experience of wisdom, for in much wisdom is much vexation. Okay, so certainly a theme as well. We've got that used five times. Yeah, John? Okay, and that's sort of drawing that out from the second green section, where he's saying he's trying to understand wisdom and madness and folly. Madness and folly would be, I think, communicating one idea or foolishness. You have wisdom and folly, just as constantly presented throughout the book of Proverbs, which he does. He's like, I want to understand these and what they do and how they interact with our world. Which one's better? Is one actually going to solve our problems or not? So he kind of begins addressing that. Okay, so we have wisdom certainly as a theme, and it is important to acknowledge that he's saying he's going to search out by wisdom. He's not just going nuts here. He's not just abandoning all senses to just chase down these roads. He's saying, oh, I'm being wise about this. I'm doing this intentionally. This is planned. This is patterned. I'm doing science. I'm experimenting on humanity, and I'm trying these things myself to see how they work. Okay, so there's another theme. There's probably one more I'd draw out. Any others that you saw? Yeah, you have knowledge as well. And this is going to be, if you remember back from the structure of the book, remember the second half of the book begins to be broken up systematically by man does not know, or man cannot know, or man cannot find out the answers. Those are kind of the breaking points. So this, I think he begins to just weave themes early that are going to be major themes later on. But knowledge certainly is a theme here. There we go. There's another one. There's like four or five. Yep, if I can find it. There we go. There we go. Thank you. I think those are the four. Oh, there's one more. This is the same word, ironically. So we have, what he doesn't want to just communicate his experience, right? I mean, he is, but it's not just about him. He's saying, I want something dogmatic. I want something that's certain. Oh, I don't want to just be wavering here and there and be like, well, guys, this is kind of what I think. He's like, no, I want to know. And so if you look at this, there's a couple things going on. If you notice, almost all of the circles came in the green section, right? Not the blue. There's one right here. But everything else is in the green. And that's because we already know his conclusion. We sort of looked at the conclusion and we've already identified those themes, because we've already identified under the sun, we've already identified vanity, we've already identified striving after the wind. So we kind of already have the themes of the blue. We have the themes of his answers already starting to turn in our minds. So what's new to us today is the nature of his experiment, how he's going to go about this. And it's with his heart as his companion, with wisdom as his guide, and he's seeking to find knowledge. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of the answer to his original question in verse 3. What's the profit of all the toil at which we're toiling under the sun? Is there any? He wants to know. And ironically, he's already given us the answer at the end here. I know, in the blue, I know that this is a striving after the wind. I discovered that as the answer to his question. Not just everything is striving under the wind, but is there profit? He says, I know there's not after all of this discussion. So I think we have a good, at least, kind of word picture of what's going on, the themes, the structure. I'll remind myself not to use the pink again. That's pretty light on the left side. So let's just step through the text a little bit, which we've somewhat already done thematically. But we have verses 1 and 2, or 12 and 13, at least, already covered. So let's look at his conclusion. The first portion, he says, it's an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. A few things to note. One, and we'll note this all throughout the book, Qohelet does not shrink back from big statements about the sovereignty of God. He attributes our work, this cycle that we're in. He says, God gave this to us. And it's not very fun. It's not a very happy business that we're about here. Because if you step back with wisdom, you sort of see what's going on. You see that your life ultimately is just a part of something a lot bigger going on and difficult, because life under the sun's broken and cursed. And God did that. God cursed it. If you look back in the garden, I mean, it was as a result of man's sin, of course we know, and the responsibility of sin is on man. But God is the one that began this cycle. And he doesn't shrink back from saying that. And he won't later on either. He's not like, he doesn't deal with pain and suffering by saying, well, you know, it's really difficult and we all go through it, but I'm sure, you know, God's gonna do something with it or do something through it. He says, no, God gave it to you and he knows what he's doing and you don't. God allowed us and actually put us in this unhappy business of this cycle. He's not afraid to say that, which could be unsettling or could be comforting, depending on how you want to look at it. But I think this statement is a product of the curse. Or look at perhaps the poem illustrates it even better. The brief proverb that he says, what is crooked can't be made straight, and what is lacking can't be counted. He's just saying, look, you know that it once was like this, and now it's like this. You know that. And there's nothing you can do to realign it because God's placed us here. You don't get to do that. There's no effort, no energy, no anything that you can do to say, you know what, I'm going to fix this bone. I'm going to set it, and we're going to be all right. You can't. You don't have that ability. And you can spend your life trying to do it, but then you're going to end up with the same conclusion that Kohelet has, saying there's no profit as far as trying to reset the bone, as far as trying to break the cycle. You can't. And he says it again, you know, what's lacking can't be counted. We would probably equate this to something like don't count your chickens before they're hatched, right? If it's not there, you can't count on it. If there's not straightness, if there's not, if Proverbs isn't promises, if it doesn't always happen that way, then you can't count on it. Don't put all of your energy and your effort into saying, you know what, I know this is going to be true. I'm counting on it, because if it's lacking, you probably shouldn't. So that's his first illustration, at least, or brief poem of his conclusion. And then he says, again, I perceived, at the second blue conclusion, I perceived that this also, meaning the experiment of knowing wisdom and knowledge and applying his heart and to distinguish between what is wise and what is folly. How do we live with these two things? He's saying, you know what? Even that is like shepherding the wind. It's chasing something, trying to grab and understand something that ultimately won't reset the bone. It's just, it doesn't work that way. And he says in that last poem, he says, because honestly, as you grow in wisdom, it's just as likely that you grow in your vexation because you see how it should be. You see what ought to be, and it's not. And you look at foolish people living foolish lives, and you're like, guys, like, don't you see that's foolish? And it's just sort of vexing to watch the world with wisdom. And if you, that second phrase, if you increase knowledge, you increase sorrow. Similar idea, but this reminds me, it's actually amazing that this is pretty much the exact opposite statement, saying the same thing, that ignorance is bliss, right? If ignorance is bliss, then knowledge is sorrow. So in one sense, he's saying, not going to fix it, go enjoy it. Don't try. So don't live, and we'll get here later, but don't live with too much wisdom. Don't live with too much folly. Acknowledge what's better, but ultimately, the more you try and say, no, this ought to be, this is what it should be, this is wise, this is wisdom, you're just going to sort of work yourself up into a tizzy and be really frustrated. And this is where I'm getting to the end of what I have to say this morning. And the reason it probably wasn't the best to end here is because he didn't actually really say anything yet, except that he started and ended everything in this introduction. He says, this is what I'm doing. You're about to watch me do it. I'll unfold it. I'll show you all my research notes, right? I'll give it all to you. We're gonna look at pleasure. We're gonna look at toil, and we're gonna look at wisdom. And I'll show you exactly what I did down all of those paths. But I'm just telling you now beforehand, it doesn't fix it. There's a different way to live that's better because you won't be able to. So that's kind of the conclusion for today, to be honest. And I'm looking forward to diving in more in the next couple of weeks. Maybe do you have any questions or thoughts about this text that we looked at today? Yeah, Jerry. Yes, he does. The distinguishment between wisdom and knowledge. I'll be totally transparent and say I'm working on what I think the distinguishment is. I think that, and there's a lot of perspectives about what wisdom in Ecclesiastes means, because most that view the book negatively say that he is not approaching this with proverbial biblical wisdom, but that he's approaching it as worldly wise man. I don't think I agree with that. I think that he is approaching it as the same, and part of that goes back to authorship too, but I think he's approaching it as the same man who wrote Proverbs, but he's writing with a different perspective. I think he knows that wisdom is the pursuit. It involves godliness. If we go to the idea of like the James type idea of wisdom, you have wisdom from above and wisdom from below. And what he's saying is one's genuine wisdom and one's not. And I think that that's true here as well. That as Kohelet's using wisdom, he's saying wisdom from above. He's saying biblical godly wisdom. Perhaps to take an initial stab at it, knowledge would be the head, wisdom would be the application in real life of what you know, is a start, I think. I know that's not thorough or fleshed out, but as he wants to experience both, and they are distinct things. My heart has had a great experience of wisdom. And we know if this was Solomon, that this is someone who is blessed by God with divine wisdom, right? So I think he's approaching it with that, from that standpoint, saying divine wisdom, the knowledge of God, not knowledge of God, but almost the heart of God in this, how he would have us to live based on, yes, knowledge. But yeah, Don. So what Don's drawing out is, and you probably could have heard, but just for the sake of those listening or the recording, you're still drawing out the distinction between the two, right? The distinction between wisdom from above, wisdom from below, man's wisdom, God's wisdom. And ultimately, you know, what we're saying is men's wisdom or their ideologies or what they believe is right or what they believe they know changes constantly. It's in flux, which is true. I am, again, this is just me being transparent because I don't have a more thorough yet answer, but I'm not convinced that's what he's saying. I'm not convinced that he's saying I'm using human wisdom because of the rest of the book, because eventually he says, no, wisdom is better. And he's not talking about the world's wisdom. There are benefits to living proverbially. And it's right, it's good, we should. So I think, again, what we go back to, I think we're allowed to say and are right to say that we can be referring to God's biblical wisdom here if we remember what he's trying to solve. That what he's trying to solve is breaking the cycle. That what he's trying to solve is getting out of live, die, forget, repeat. And in that, all the wisdom in the world, God's wisdom, him being abundantly blessed with divine wisdom, couldn't do it because he's not allowed to do it. I think is what's fair to the text, but Matt. No, you're good. Correct.
In other words, it seems like, I'm not saying it's not, like that's not how something changes between the testaments.
Yep.
But I believe that when wisdom is used in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, it's a broad term. It's not like we can narrow it down to either God's wisdom. It's like, no, we're talking about just wisdom. I mean, that's my understanding of the Old Testament.
Agree. And just to add on to that, I think it's consistent with James, because James isn't saying actually that there's two kinds of wisdom. He's saying there's wisdom and there's this stuff that man's doing that they call wisdom, and it's not. Just like he's not saying there's two kinds of faith. He's not saying there's genuine faith that produces works and then there's this other kind of faith that doesn't. He's saying, no, that's actually not faith. So, yeah. But yeah, carry on. Exactly.
And it can be striving after the wind to try to corral even right God's wisdom. And a lot of people don't believe that, and they frustrate themselves because they think, no, if it's God's wisdom, it's gotta always make sense to me. It's gotta always work perfectly.
Or it should, or there's an expectation that God's wisdom solves certain problems. That it doesn't, or it will cause you to avoid certain dangers or pitfalls or pains that it doesn't promise. It goes back to what we are trying to get out of this. If we're trying to get out of this, what we expect, aka, you know, the avoidance from pain or skipping out on this or that, like Job would have was trying, right? And it didn't work, even though he was a righteous man, even though he loved God. It didn't. That's not what the purpose of wisdom is.
Is that It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man. And I looked at that word God, and I've done a little study in it, that this is the only book that does not have the Hebrew word for God, Yahweh, and that small capital Lord in there does not show up in that book. And I think is what Solomon is saying, giving credence. This is man's stuff. This is what man, God has given man this ability to look at this stuff, where the real stuff comes from God. And that kind of what Harry started to say with it, in that Lord type, if you see Lord in there, the Yahweh part of it, you would see a lot of this was coming from God. But this stuff, he said, I perceive as man looking at it this way and getting all that stuff, and it was wind.
And that's part of what he's getting at by laying this out the way that he did, by saying, I tried everything, guys. Like you're talking about gaining a knowledge by experience and wisdom both by experience in various ways. He's saying, if there's anybody, it's me. I'm like the ultimate wisdom weekend warrior. Like I had all the opportunities. I had all the power. At all the authority. I'm God's man. I'm leading the people. I have it all. And I tried it all. And his conclusion remains the same. So it's not just somebody chipping in and being like, well, I think this. You know, he's like, no. I thought it all. I tried it. This is like a long-term experiment here. Jerry. Exactly. That, I completely agree with what you're saying, and that's where I'm at, is that the wisdom that he's using, I believe, is divine wisdom. It was given to, that's part of the whole reason that this is the guy that wrote this book, is that it's from God. So yes, and again, I'm also with you, how exactly he's using that, I will hopefully have a little bit better answer by next week, because those are the sections in which he's using it, right? He's saying, no, I pursued pleasure with wisdom. He says that. That's the very beginning of chapter 2. Just look there really quick. There's a couple times he uses it. So in verse 3, I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine. My heart's still guiding me with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly. So he's like, you know what I chased down? I chased down drinking with wisdom. Okay? What does he mean? Or at the end, verse 9, so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. So he's not abandoning it. And then the next section, 12 through 17, is the whole section, is a section about the pursuit of wisdom. He turns to consider wisdom, madness, folly, the same phrase he just used here. So essentially what I'm saying is, be gracious with me because some of these questions that it raises here are ones that we'll necessarily pursue in the next couple weeks. So that's our time. Thanks for helping me fill it. Let's go ahead and close in prayer.